Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
On this week's Patreon episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, we talk about the birth of the Telecaster and how that relates to the birth of the Esquire. We also answer questions from AC about getting back into guitar after a long time of not playing, a question from David about cheap amp switches, and a question from Saz about plect setups. If you want to listen to that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
Sorry.
You all right there?
Good morning.
Joe Branton.
Hello.
And special guest this week, Dan Grace.
Hello. Hello there.
Friend of the podcast. What a great start we're off to. Dan, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
I understand we're in the middle of the Great Escape Festival, so it's been a struggle to get us all together this morning.
I made a great escape away from my hangover, and I don't think Dan did.
I have not yet made a great escape from my hangover. The Great Escape caused my hangover, and it's still with me, ladies and gentlemen.
But it is Great Escape Week end in Brighton.
So we should talk about what that is, because most people won't know what that is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Great Escape is, what is it, like the third biggest city-based festival in the world. So it's the same sort of vibe as, I was reading
I think it's the second, isn't it? After South by Southwest.
So after South by Southwest. And it's the same sort of vibe. So Brighton as a city opens all its venues to the Great Escape, and there are lots of art performances and shows going on all over town.
Anywhere that they can squeeze a music show into will have a music show in it. I remember a couple of years ago in Jubilee Square, the centre of town, with a van that had the back doors open with bands playing on it, and they called it a stage.
There was a few years ago, that band The Computers played a show in a laundrette, which was very weird.
A fantastic
show. I bet
that
sounded absolutely awful.
I'm not sure exactly what was going on, but as I was on my way home yesterday, I go past a CAF, which is like, it's never open because it only opens in the morning for builders. It's called Belchers. That's the CAF.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday, as I walked past, there were some bands going in there, and there was lights like from the outside. I assume they were filming some sort of video. But yeah, there were lights like proper like film lighting rigs outside it. And it is just, they open at, I don't know, about 5 in the morning, something like that. They open for builders to come in, have a kind of greasy breakfast, and then they close, I think, by 9, and that's their work day. But yeah, it's the first time I've ever seen it open, and they were filming some sort of music video in there.
Oh, right.
Yeah, really weird. And I saw a couple of other bits, like things on the seafront. I go past the bandstand, which is down on the seafront, and there was some sort of TV show being filmed on there to do with Great Escape.
Mark has just started cycling to work, and so seeing
stuff,
as opposed to just keeping his eyes closed as he walks to the train station every morning. This is you've just put your wristband in your coffee,
I
mate.
Have just done that, yeah.
It has been literally a bit of an eye opener seeing other humans that aren't just the same 4 people I sit next to on the train every day.
But from avoiding eye contact at all costs to actually seeing some real life.
Yes.
How long? What's the statute of limitations on how long your seat on the train has to be kept kept spare until, you know...
Oh, what, because now I'm, like, splitting my time between cycling and training?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, the crew have kept it there for me. I normally, if I go on the train, I get there very early, so it's always free anyway. Doesn't matter. Anyway, so...
I went for a little walk around the Great Escape yesterday to see what was going on, and there were loads more stages than I think there have ever been. And what's quite cool, this year Fender have got... they've taken over Patterns, which is a nightclub, sort of near the seafront in Brighton, and they've turned that into there's a stage where they're having loads of bands playing, and they've got displays in there of all their new gear or current gear, which is really cool. It's really well laid out, and it looks like a fantastic little venue. And Sennheiser have got a bus in the middle of town as well.
Really?
Yeah, they've got a big bus. You can go on. I went on there. There was that fella from the Streets was there.
And, Mike Skinner.
And we were allowed to drink some of his rider. I didn't because it was the middle of the working day and I had to go back to the office.
When has that ever stopped you?
Yeah, I am not drinking in work hours anymore.
Joe Branton 2.0.
Yeah, what's on the Sennheiser bus?
It's like an artist backstage bit almost. So there's like, again, there's displays of all their mics and everything, but it was just basically people sort of hanging out there. You can only get in with you have to have a performer wristband.
Right.
Or like me, be able to blag your way in. Well, no, actually, it's because I did a deal with Sennheiser to get the GAC logo on all of their mics for The Great Escape.
Right.
It's really good. It's very vibrant. The city is buzzing.
Jay and I last night went to the Hope and... Oh, and Dan was there as well. Yeah, went to the Hope and Ruin, and we saw a band that I didn't think were very good, and then we saw something that I was expecting to not be very good, and it was incredibly good.
From what you've told me, it sounds really, really low quality.
So
it was a true eye-opener.
Do the description.
So last year at The Great Escape, at the Hope and Ruin again, this guy called B.A. Johnson played.
Johnston. Yeah.
I think you just say Johnson, though, don't you?
No.
Is it Johnston?
No,
Johnston.
That's a name. B.A. Johnston.
B.A. Johnston played, and all my friends who work at The Hope were like, this geezer was absolutely incredible. Next time he's in town, you've got to come and see him. And I said, okay, well, what is it? And they went, well, he kind of plays acoustic guitar and like runs around and takes his clothes off. And I said, that doesn't sound very good. And they went, I know, but just like... And like a bunch of people were like, just trust me, it's so good. So I made it so that me and Dan were going to be there on time, and then I didn't tell Mark that there were any bands playing.
Because I was thinking, because The Hope does great food, so I was thinking, you know, I want to go out, it's Friday night, I want to get out of the house. What I want to do is go and eat some nice food and sit at a pub table with my mates and have a bit of a drink and chill out. And then I got there, and there was like... just another grunge band playing, which is the theme of The Great Escape this year.
So the,
what are you talking
I didn't
about? Great Escape is like soft indie.
Well, that yeah, that, but that is kind of other grunge now.
But anyway, we were there, and this geezer had been walking around, and it was like, okay, let's see what happens here. And
I'd describe him as quite a short, sort of portly man with a big beard. And he looked like he didn't smell great.
I mean, that one's on you, I guess. But he was absolutely hilarious. It wasn't really a music show; it was a comedy show.
Yeah.
He was playing an acoustic guitar for a little bit, a Malibu
SCE,
Fender Malibu SCE,
absolute classic.
And he had backing tracks playing off of his Discman. And
I think he pressed the demo button on a Casio keyboard at one point.
It was really, really funny and really, really good.
My favourite song was the one about stealing from work called "How Many T-Bone Steaks Can I Fit Down My Pants?"
Yeah, he was. It was very good. But as well as that, like we also saw some actual bands. Before you got there, we saw this band from, I think, the Netherlands.
They're from Amsterdam. They're called Pip Blom.
Pip Blom. And again, they're one of these bands that I've seen a lot of people talking about at The Great Escape. And I don't normally buy into this whole, oh yeah, there's a buzz around this one band, you've got to go and see them. But like, they were playing at The Hope, so we went and saw them. And I tell you what, they were really, really good. Like,
they were
like quite young, I guess, like probably early 20s.
I think they're even younger than that, you know.
Yeah.
What were they playing?
Late teens, early 20s, maybe.
They were playing kind of indie.
No. What guitars?
Oh, what guitars?
So the come on, singer, the important bit, the not what music.
Singer with an AC30 and a late 70s Fender Mustang.
Yeah.
In black with a black plate. Which, was...
Didn't sound great.
It looked so cool, but did not sound all that great. We had a bass player with a real old P-bass copy.
Yeah, some sort of P-bass.
Some but real fat sort of Japanese P-bass copy with right. a big, big humbucker in it.
He obviously knew what he was doing because he had... So he had this P-bass going into, I think, an Ampeg Portflex.
Right.
So you think, okay, well, whatever. But his pedal board was... just unbelievable. We had, I don't know which one it was, but one of the really large Pete Cornish preamp pedals.
Really?
Yeah, it was wow. It was massive. One of the biggest ones I've ever seen. And he had that, and he also had the Dan Electro Spring King. The one that you can stamp on.
Yeah.
And that sounded amazing as well. And then the other guitar player was playing a Silvertone, like a 60s Silvertone.
Oh man, this is some great
into a Hot Rod DeVille 410. They were fantastic, really, really cool. And I was talking, one of my mates is their booking agent, and she was saying that they're like, they've got some big shows coming up.
They're like big Breeders and Garbage.
So it's like pretty full on.
Some real big gigs. The drummer's great as well. It was like Animal from the Muppets, Sister or something.
Yeah. They're really good band, really cool. So I definitely recommend checking them out.
Lots of gear on display.
Lots of gear, yeah. And then we saw this band that played afterwards, had a huge pedal board, but just always the same, like, falls down for me is bands that don't have a bass player.
Yeah.
It was just a guitar and a drummer, and it's like, it just isn't enough.
You need a bass player.
Yeah, so... But yeah, other than that, I mean, seen some other, like, cool stuff here and there. Watch this band, this geezer, Sam Fender.
Bit weird.
Was playing the Fender stage.
He was really good, actually.
I thought I misheard... I was speaking to Hannah, the marketing manager at Fender, about it, and I thought I'd misheard, like, his surname or something.
Yeah, no, Sam Fender. But he was really cool. I mean, not really my thing. It was like, very... Pop, guitar indie. But he was great. Like, he had a great voice, really great voice. So yeah, I mean, it's been good so far. I'm always really cynical of the Great Escape, and I think that comes from working in the guitar shop in the centre of the Great Escape.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the people that work in the guitar centre in Austin hate South by Southwest because it's just a nightmare. Oh. I'm sure they do. And that's how I've had it soured, but. Having been away from it for 3 years, I'm actually really enjoying it. Like, being able to go around and seeing all your mates who you don't see very regularly, and some great, like, genuinely great bands.
So for Great Escape, I always try and get some free stuff into the shop that we can give away to people with Great Escape wristbands when they come in. And I always try and make sure that it's absolute rubbish, whatever I'm giving away. And this year, I feel that I've completely outdone myself because I managed to get hold of 1,000 of these like safety things, like security things for guitars. Now, when I got them, I thought that they're these things that you can put on your guitar. That means you can track your guitar if it ever gets stolen. Great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Great.
Oh,
okay. Perfect. Okay. So that's what I thought I was buying 1,000 of to give away at Great Escape. As it turns out, the concept is they are stickers with a code on them, and you would register your address and name and contact details on the website of this company. And then if your guitar... goes missing and someone finds it, they can see the sticker, go onto the website, type in the code, and it will give them your details so they can contact you to give it back.
So basically, if you steal a guitar, it gives you a location of somewhere else where there might be more guitars that you can steal.
Exactly. Literally the worst product. I couldn't fathom that that's a business model. That someone's going, yep, this is it. Like, they've been printed. Like, they were in plastic boxes. There were stickers, there's a company logo, there's a description of it. Like, more than one person has dealt with this. And at no point has anyone else involved in this gone, mate, this is the worst idea of all time.
Who's going to want to put that on a on a guitar that they like.
Well, exactly. The stickers weren't small either. No wonder I got them for free.
Is there a space on the page where you type in your address to say where the spare key is as well?
Yeah, if you just want to pop this one back, the key's under the flower pot and the front one. It's basically what you've described, Joe, is just like writing your name in your PE kit.
Yeah.
That's essentially what they've created.
They were supposed to retail at £6 a pack and you get 6 stickers.
Okay.
So that does mean that if you find one of these guitars that's got someone's name and address on,
they probably have five more guitars.
So yeah.
There is a company, and I can't remember what they were called. I saw them a couple of years at like a tech show that do essentially what you were talking about, GPS tracking.
I went specifically to see a presentation by a company that did this recently because I think it's actually a really good idea.
Definitely.
And a fantastic way of bringing down the insurance cost and stuff if it was taken seriously. But yeah, there was a company that developed a really small chip, and they'd even thought about like where you could fit it on a guitar. So they had slightly different sized ones depending on the guitar you play, and gave you instructions on where best to fit it. Like on a Stratocaster, it's underneath the scratch plate, sort of by the bridge pickup and stuff like that. They made them discreet and also thought about what people are going to have to do, and that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, not just scribbling your name on the back of the headstock, essentially. Dan Grace, we've not actually talked about why you're here, apart from just being around and being our mate. Since probably the last time you were on the podcast, you were working at BIM.
Quite a long time ago now.
Which we talked about, the Brighton Institute of Modern Music.
Yep. I think we talked about being a session musician.
We did.
My experience playing in lots of different bands and stuff like that, and what you have to do to kind of succeed in working in the music business.
Yeah, and also the things that you'd learned from your time at BIM, I think, teaching the kids how to play
the musics.
Yeah.
And how to earn the monies from playing the musics.
How to avoid working in McDonald's playing the musics. But since then, you've changed jobs. And for full disclosure reasons, as well as it's quite interesting, we should probably talk about what you do now. Yeah. So you're on, you're with that one over there, aren't you? You're on Jay's team.
Yeah, I've moved into a new job working as a product manager for Fender, for acoustic guitars and for Squire guitars as well.
So you're the man in charge of Squire now, right? If I just say pink sparkle telly and nothing else, you can make that happen.
I would like to make that happen. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
Might nick that one.
Good. So what does your job involve?
So my job involves looking at what we do, really, looking at spreadsheets.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking at my job involves looking at numbers.
We did talk quite a lot last night about the most complicated VLOOKUP we'd ever done in Excel.
Yes. Before I worked at Fender, I used to use Excel a little bit, and now I use Excel.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is everybody sort of thinks, oh, wow, yeah, you work for product manager for Fender. That means that you're like playing guitar all the time, or like, you know, going to see bands all the time, or you're saying, oh, we need to make this amp. It's like, no, what I'm doing is I'm sitting in front of a spreadsheet and I'm typing numbers into it. And then at the end of the day, I'm looking at it, I'm going, cool, that looks great.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get excited by guitars anymore. I get excited by efficient spreadsheets.
Oh, when you see a spreadsheet that's got like no formatting on it, and you're like, whoa. And then by the end of the session, you're like, yeah, that header, like, that's grey and bold, and I've left enough space. Oh, it looks fantastic.
When some of the numbers are in the centre of the box, and some of the numbers are to the right of the box.
Yes.
And
some of the numbers are to
the left of the box.
You've got to sort out your spacing.
This is really what all our jobs have become.
What I really do, obviously, I do look at a lot of spreadsheets, but I spend a lot of my time wondering where all the guitars go.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of guitars out there. A lot of people are buying guitars.
Yeah.
Where do they all go?
It is mad when you think about it. You know, like, even just working on the shop floor of GAC, sometimes at Christmas we'd be selling 50 guitars a day, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe even more than that.
More than that sometimes, I think.
And then, yeah, I mean, if you consider all the departments, you know, the electric guitars, basses, acoustics, you know, all the folk stuff, there's probably at least...
I think Christmas time, sometimes in just acoustic guitars, we were selling about 50 a day.
And you do think, where do these end up? Do people hold on to all this stuff? You know, how can there be more guitars going out the door all the time? And you guys probably see that more than we do now, because you see the numbers.
That's it. We see not just one store's worth of numbers. You see the whole, well,
Europe,
of,
really.
Of Europe, the Middle East.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's, Africa.
It is funny when, being on this side of it now, it is really funny when you see stuff on the internet of people saying, oh, you know, guitar's dead, you know, rock music's dead. And it just, I mean, the amount of guitars that are still being sold, and it's across the price range, you know, from Dan's stuff, or, you know, what's the cheapest Squire at the moment? 120 quid?
£120.
All the way up to, you know, top end custom shops and stuff. And that's just one brand, you know, that's just Fender. Goodness knows what Yamaha are doing and what Epiphone are doing and everyone, you know, this
Taylor, Takamine, you know.
Dan,
I mean?
Come on, we're not here to talk about acoustic guitars. Grow up, mate.
No one likes acoustics.
Everyone likes acoustics. No.
It's pretty fascinating to hear you guys talking. You know, obviously you've let me know some numbers that we probably can't share on here, but yeah, it is.
We don't tell you anything.
Sure, right, yeah, of course. It is amazing to hear how many guitars are still going out the door every day.
Lots the of thing people is, are still playing guitar.
The well, thing is I think that I can now say after about 10 years of working in a guitar shop and about 5 years of doing podcasts about guitars and 18 months of working for Fender, I think I'm a fairly good authority and I can say guitars are wicked.
Yeah, that is the thing.
Guitars are wicked.
They will always be wicked.
Fantastic. If anyone's listening to this podcast who's never played guitar before, all I can recommend is go and pick up a guitar because it's wicked.
That's going to be the title of this episode. Guitars are wicked.
Guitars are wicked. It's true.
So
it's true.
Is there anything that you can share with us that's happening with Squire at the moment? Because I guess our audience is probably most interested in that rather than the acoustics in general. You don't have to, nothing confidential, but is there anything?
No, there will, I'm not going to say anything.
Okay.
Apart from, we've got loads of good stuff out at the moment. I mean, the Contemporary Series launched at NAMM this year, which had a really good response.
What was the we were talking about it last night. There was one Jazzmaster that's left behind in the in the public's kind of
The
knowledge.
The deluxe Jazzmaster, which is kind of a little red herring, and is actually a red guitar.
Yeah.
I think we maybe pushed this into Gear of the Year. I think it was nominated a couple of years ago.
I mean, how long has it been out?
Good few years now.
Oh, okay.
It was definitely out when we were still in the shop.
So we talked about it last night in that the Squire Deluxe series is a bit of an odd one because there's one thing in there that's not like the others.
It's going to be discontinued fairly soon.
Okay.
It's not something that's going to be continuing and all that kind of style stuff will go kind of elsewhere. But with the Deluxe Jazzmasters, they're so, so cool. They're red, anodized plate, P90s. There's one with a stop tail and one... Sorry?
Well, they're not really P90s, are they?
They're
not
the
Jazzmasters.
They're the Jazzmaster pickup.
I'm not trying to... I nearly didn't say anything.
Okay, Jay.
an overwound flat single coil.
Yeah.
There you go. They've got overwound flat single coils, which sounds just as catchy as saying a P90. they've not been selling as well as I thought, but we sent an email out recently just with a picture of them, and all of a sudden so many people started buying them.
Yeah,
I think it's that there's certain areas of the Squire range that get forgotten about just because there's just say one guitar in that part of the series.
Just, you explained it last night, just talk through the guitars that are in the deluxe range.
So there's a Jazzmaster,
yep,
a 4-string bass,
yep,
and a 5-string bass,
of course. And the 4-string is like active, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
active 4 and active 5. And then you've just got those two, which, fine, they've kind of got a reason to exist in the bass world.
But then
there's just this Jazzmaster.
The Deluxe series was a lot more extensive.
Yeah.
Though it's just something that's been kind of transitioning over to other series, moving them into different parts of the series where they make a bit more sense, you know.
Yeah, it's weird that Jazzmaster is a real kind of diamond in the rough and still kicking.
But then, you know, there's a lot more to be had from, say, Vintage Modified and Classic Vibe as well. You look at Vintage Modified where you've got some Mustangs and a load of Jazzmasters and Jaguars as well in lots of different colours. And they're more akin to, you know, the classic specs. Kind of what a lot of people want from Squire is a guitar that looks just like the more expensive stuff but is way more affordable.
Yeah.
Is the kind of lower price point. And you get so many people, for instance, the band we saw last night that you didn't like so much, where he was playing a couple of Squires, a Vint Mod Jazzmaster and a Deluxe Jazzmaster as well, that he had kind of ripped a load of pickups out of, changed all the switching settings as well, so he didn't have a toggle switch or didn't have a tone control, stuff like that.
That Vint Mod series especially are a great, like, if a blank canvas if you want to...
Modding platform. Yeah. That's it. You can switch it out and you've not, you know, ruined your custom shop Jazzmaster that you spent $3,000 on or something, you know. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, that's what we've seen, really. And that sounds like, from what you guys are saying, that... Yeah, Squire is becoming the modding platform of choice, and maybe you'll lean into that more in the future. You never know. But
absolutely, even in, you know, things like Bullet,
yeah,
Bullet guitars.
I think we've seen like 60 cycle hum sort of really, you know, showed what you can do with the Bullet Mustang, especially.
Yeah, yeah.
They released like a series of videos where they modded different bits of it, you know, each time, and they've turned that into an incredible guitar.
Yeah, yeah, completely. I think that's what's cool about that Bullet Mustang in particular. I think is a if I remember correctly, and I'm I don't mean to talk myself up here, but if I remember correctly, when we did Gear of the Year last year, everyone else said, "No, the Epiphone SL, that's the one," and I was like, actually, the Mustang is the better one. And
you were right.
And Ryan had both and did loads of stuff to both and ended up getting rid of the SL because it was not as, for what he wanted it for, which is like a modding platform, the Mustang was a better place to which I believe is what I said at the time, and everyone poo-pooed me.
Yeah,
and
I poo-poo you often,
and you know, I'm all I need to say is even a broken clock is right twice a day, you know. So
yes, and you are indeed a broken clock. Joey B, talking about guitars that you don't need to mod, you've spent some time this week with a load of new Ormsby guitars.
Oh my god, yeah, the new Ormsby Goliaths finally turned up after sort of, you know, being announced like, I don't know, like halfway through last year.
Yeah.
And then and then seeing them at NAMM and seeing them in Birmingham, they've finally landed for us at our shop.
So what's the story on these? Are these the ones that are made in-house, or are they the ones that are made... Because there's two ranges on Ormsby, isn't there?
That's right. So so Ormsby has its custom shop, which is made by Perry in Australia, and they have their GTR series, which are made in World Music Co. in Korea. So these are part of the GTR series, so they're sort of like they're like £1,500 ish, or a bit less, I think. And yeah, this is, I don't think anyone else is putting out anything this extreme for this sort of price point.
They are fairly futuristic. There's the headless, and obviously the body shape is pretty non-conventional.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So they're like a gorgeously sort of offset body shape, headless, extremely fan fretted. Like the fan fretting is much more severe than on like Strandberg, which is probably its closest counterpart.
Yeah,
the fan fretting on Strandberg is kind of more for to have fanned frets, rather than the actual purpose of fan frets being to be able to drop tune with a decent amount of tension. The Ormsby's are fantastic for that, and they also come in like a really broad range of really interesting finishes. So there was like a blue to green sort of one of those things that like changes color depending on where you look at it, like
pearlescent finish.
Yeah, that sort of thing, that had a sort of, was it almost a bit purpley as well. That was super cool. And there was like a satin finish, like green burst, like satin flame top green burst, which I thought was absolutely blinding. And then there were these they were like ebony top, is it Macassar ebony?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like some super glossy tops, one of those. So even the finishes are really, really different and really kind of really extreme, really not the sort of thing you expect at this price point. It was proper sort of custom shop style finishes out of World Music Co.
Yeah.
which was fantastic. So yeah, they were all great. And you know, we got some six strings and some seven strings. We sold two on the first day that we got them in. So as soon as we posted a picture on them, bear in mind our website messed up, and when I posted the first picture of them,
The internet got involved and they said this picture is too stupid.
Well, no, it priced it at 10 grand because the way Facebook works with your pricing catalogue is it takes a snapshot. And so there is a risk if you're mid-build on a product when it takes that snapshot and you post something out with your catalogue linked to it before it's taken its next snapshot.
So if you've basically put in 9999999999, yeah, it's just to while you build the product.
Oh, it's a flipping purchases. It's like just do it. Just list the product in one sitting. Like, don't half make something and save it, which is just what happened. That was all.
Well, I mean, so I think that's pretty much every website ever, yeah, is that, yeah, putting stuff on there, you do the price last. You just, yeah, go, no.
Yeah, totally. Just a placeholder.
That's exactly what it was. So he probably only did that for half an hour because Facebook,
yeah,
took that shot. So there were like loads of comments, but you're like, 10 grand, you know, sort of everyone's so funny, aren't they? People are so witty online. I really wish I was those people. But yeah, we listed that and sold a couple. So they've proven to be really popular. And I do think if you're after something fan fret, I don't think there's anything coming anywhere close to Ormsby at the moment.
Yeah, they're doing some very nice stuff indeed. With that, shall we dive into a whole big barrel of
Nude Apostle?
That's a weird choice.
That was a weird choice.
Dan Grace is here as the Nude Apostle.
Yeah.
So off you
pop,
mate.
I am completely naked.
Yeah. Good to know. Nice visual picture for the listeners.
Well, you can see it. So.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's not a nice visual picture for me. First up, Gibson have announced a brand new signature model, a 2018 version of their Les Paul for Tac Matsumoto. Jay Cross.
Actually,
oh, Joe Branton knows about it.
Okay, yeah. So this is cool. So... Tac Matsumoto's had this his new Les Paul Custom Shop signature model made in it's very exactly what I expect to come out of like a signature model in sort of the Asian market. It's got that feel to it. It's sort of Gibson, you know, made into that sort of really flamboyant style. That so
flamboyant is the word I would have used, yeah, as well.
I mean, yeah, he's had quite extreme guitars before, hasn't he? If you look back at the other signature models that he's had, they've always been pretty bonkers.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, this kind of follows that trend very much so.
So the reason for this is because he had this made 20 years ago by Gibson. They made him one then, so they're doing a limited run to celebrate his band's 30th anniversary. And this is a canary yellow, yeah, plateless Les Paul with zebra pickups. Slim neck and a chamber body, so it's very sort of, you know, it's Gibson made as un-Gibson-y as possible. It's very 80s and, you know, lightweight, skinny neck, zebra pickups-y. It even says Tac Matsumoto on the body of the guitar in true sort of Steinberger fashion.
Yeah, it's kind of down the neck pocket,
yeah,
kind of vibe. Kind of like about it is the fact that it's canary yellow top, but it's like natural mahogany back and sides. Yeah, I think that's kind of a nice little touch.
Yeah, it's relatively tasteful for what it's worth. I mean, I cannot stand the abalone block inlays.
Just never works for me. Like the the abalone inlays, because they're just, if they were just the regular perloid, it would look so much classier. These just, I don't know, it's just one bit of styling that I don't think has worked on any guitar ever.
Though, this guitar is not designed to be understated.
No, sure, but I think if anything, it makes, you know, you put abalone on a guitar, it just makes it look cheaper. Like, it's one of those things, I think, that manufacturers think, oh, this makes the guitar look more expensive, but actually, in 99% of cases, it makes it look much cheaper. You see it on acoustics a lot.
Like, yeah, it makes it look like costume jewellery. That's what I think of.
Yeah.
What Mark is saying is all guitars should be vegan.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Is abalone not vegan?
Yeah, they're snails.
Really?
Yeah.
So you can play this.
Also, well, I won't.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I realise that for other reasons.
It's Gibson Custom Shop, so it is hide glue as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I didn't think about that. Yeah, you guys can't even play the hide glue.
Can't play Gibson Custom Shop.
So. Yeah.
You've got a Gibson Custom Shop.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah.
The thing about this is it is a very strange guitar. So I really liked the old Tak Matsumoto. Which was, do you remember he had the it was the sort of predecessor almost to that modern double cut, the one that looked a bit like a PRS. I really liked that guitar. I thought that was cool. And they did an Epiphone one for a while as well.
Yeah, they did.
Which was very cool. And but again, I think it kind of fell into kind of what you were talking about, Dan, in the fact that it wasn't really part of a series. It was just a guitar by itself, and I think that's where the Tak stuff has always fallen down, is that it's not part of a series, it's just one guitar by itself, and it's so difficult to make a sort of a big song and dance of a guitar, one guitar by itself.
And also, you know, he's a signature artist who is probably not that well known over here.
Well,
you know?
Completely. I mean, the band that he's in is the Biz
or B-B-Z
B apostrophe Z Bees. I don't know. I only know who this person is because they have a Gibson. They've had a number of Gibson Custom Shop models. That's the only reason that I know who they are.
I've never heard the band. No, but I've heard of the guitar.
Yeah, sure. Completely.
Sure.
Completely.
It did remind me of I forget the guy's name now. There's a not Fernandez. What's the Edwards, the sub-brand of ESP. Oh, yeah. There's a Japanese guitar player who's got a signature model which looks like a Hawaiian shirt.
Yes. Yeah.
Ken Yokoyama.
Just a Hawaiian shirt finish, or it's shaped like a
Hawaiian shirt finish.
Oh.
But it looks excellent, and you can never ever find them. It's really disappointing. I'd love to try one of those.
I'm really into Hawaiian shirts at the moment.
For guy from High Standard, Ken Yokoyama.
Yokoyama.
It sounds great. I want it. I'm really into Hawaiian shirts.
Oh, well, you're wearing one right now.
I am. I'm going to continue to wear one. I'm going to go and buy enough so that I can wear one every day. I'm going to do that later.
Which
today.
Is better, because you've been wearing that one for, I mean, I've seen, I
about
think,
4 or 5 days.
Yeah,
now,
I think I've seen a photo a day of you for the last week, and you've been wearing it.
Joe, you seem to be turning into Ace Ventura.
It all fits now.
But that very specific bit of Ace Ventura when he comes out of the rhino's bum, that's what you look like right now.
No, that's the second one.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're much less Ace Ventura and you're much more Ace Ventura 2 when nature calls. Definitely. Next up, another brand new guitar from Kort. Not someone we talk about much, but they've just announced this Sunset TC.
Yeah, so when I saw this, I thought, when I saw the name, I thought Sunset TC. Okay, it's by Kort. What Kort have done is they've made a... they've done what Kort always do, which is make a knockoff cheap Telecaster.
You genuinely said, when we were looking at the podcast notes, you said, has nothing more exciting happened
completely
than Kort release a guitar?
Well, no, because it's called the Sunset TC, which sounds like a knockoff Telecaster.
Yeah,
but actually what it is something very, very cool. So there's two models here, and they look like Les Pauls, really. Well, maybe not Les Pauls. They look kind of like
sort of like a wider Les Paul Junior.
Yeah, it's got
a bit
more ordery. A bit of a big bottom. And what's the what was that guitar that you were talking about in that video? That Gibson, the
Marauder.
Not the Marauder. The one that the guy from Beachland played.
That was not a Marauder.
No,
that was a Sonics.
It looks like that. It looks like a Sonics, but that is like a sort of man-made material, wasn't it?
That was the plastic body thing.
This is a
Les Paul Junior-y Sonics.
I'll tell you what, it actually
Les Paul
looks
Junior meets a telly, really,
well,
isn't
completely.
It?
So you've got P90 in the neck, and you've got a telly style bridge and bridge pickup, but in
and control plate
and control plate and in two colours, kind of like a trans amber and a arctic white. Sorry, worn butter blonde and worn white blonde.
Okay,
but they're both relict.
White blonde looks great.
Is that what you think? I think the relicking is shown up for being like factory relicking on the white one. The amber one looks a bit more believable.
Do you know what I really like about this sort of almost like the Fender road worn sort of style of relicking is when you first buy it, maybe it doesn't look quite right, but you play it a bit
and it wears in.
Because you've got super thin skin on it.
They look almost like custom shop guitars in not very much time.
You're probably right. I have to say this is a pretty perfect guitar. You don't expect to be saying that about Cort, but Les Paul Junior, best body shape.
Yeah.
P90 and a Telly pickup.
Yeah.
Two of the best pickups. Like, it's understated, it's simple, it's relicked. It comes in white. Like, everything about this guitar is great.
Yeah, I tell you what's interesting. I don't know if you paid attention to the control plate, but very, very interesting, because the pickup selector is in the middle.
Oh yeah, that's
and
weird.
The volume and tone are either side of the pickup selector. So presumably the one that's closest to the one that's closest to the like facing towards the neck is probably a volume control, so that you can do like volume swells and stuff.
But pretty much they've gone, which is the order in these of the importance of these things?
Yeah.
Volume,
then pickup selector,
and then one that no one uses.
Yeah, except Joe.
Do you know what the body shape actually reminds me of?
Go on.
For listeners who want to get a kind of closer visual impression, do you remember the Yamaha AES Drop 6? Which is like a sort of Les Paul style baritone. They did some non-baritone ones as well, but it's kind of like a flattened out sort of Les Paul Junior.
Even the headstock's kind of similar to those.
Yeah,
old
totally.
Yamaha
yeah,
style
totally,
ones.
Totally. These look awesome. I want to try and
The cool thing about it is, as well, not huge money. $699. $599 USD. So presumably there'll be 500 quid.
Something like £599.
Probably something like that.
The question is, if you play it up against a Gordon Smith, is it going to
win? Very, very good
win?
Question. Very, very good question.
It's just another guitar in the mix.
Wait.
£600.
Is it bolt-on?
Don't know.
Because I've just seen a picture of the back of the neck and I've realised that it's unfinished.
Oh no, that's all right. That's fine.
No, that's not cool.
No, that's fine.
It
I can deal with that.
It's bolt on.
Okay, but I mean, if you want a kind of telly sound out of it, then.
But it doesn't have a lacquered neck. Why would you have a vintage style guitar without a lacquered neck? Like, who wants that?
Me.
I can't believe how quickly you flipped on this.
A modern neck. Like, no, but seriously, who wants a modern neck profile on a vintage guitar? That's not something anyone wants.
What are we talking about?
People who like satin finished necks buy modern guitars, and people who like...
That's absolutely
what
not
do you,
true.
What do you mean, modern guitars? What, like an Ormsby?
No, like an American Professional.
Yeah, I mean, just that's not a modern guitar, it's just
like
a telly.
No, but it's not. It's not, is it? Because the tuners and the bridge look rubbish on the American Pros. They don't look vintage, do they? That's
because they're not vintage. Because they're
square, chunky, modern.
The last thing I want on any guitar is a tint neck.
Why?
Because they're awful to play.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
I like satin necks on any guitar.
Oh, for goodness sake!
I tell you what is weird about this.
I really don't. I think when you know when you get your custom shop and some of them you can opt for it to be sanded down on the back and stuff like that. Just no.
Oh no, I'm
it's gotta be lacquered.
It's gotta be glass. I like it to be nice and smooth.
Raw. I like it raw.
I tell you what is weird about this, and I never really understand the deviation from it, but this is 9.45 inch radius.
It's the classic radius that everyone wants.
Of course, yeah.
It's so close.
25.5 inch scale and 9.45 inch radius.
Interesting.
Yeah, this guitar's rubbish. If it was 200 quid, if it was 200 quid, I'd be like, yeah, it's great. But at £600 for a bolt-on satin neck, this is going to feel worse than a Squire, and it costs three times as much.
But that's what a Mexican guitar... That's what like a Fender Mexico is.
They're not very good either.
What are you talking about?
I'm going to see if
I've got to admit, my money would be on a Gordon Smith.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. At that price point, I'd get a Gordon.
Different thing, though.
Yeah, different guitar, definitely. This is, you know, you've got the Telly-style bridge and the Telly-style pickup. But again, you know, how different is it really going to be once you plug it in and you're rocking out?
Well, I mean, I just think it's another option. Because for me, I like that body shape a lot, but I kind of want a Telly. So this guitar would suit that sound better because it's bolt on neck, because it's Telly pickup rather than a Gordon Smith, which is obviously, you know, glued neck and humbuckers or P90. I'm going to give these a go. I'm going to try and find one.
And I think it's we were talking about this before we recorded, and Mark, you made a good point in that, you know, Cort make guitars for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So it only makes sense for them to start doing their own stuff as well. Obviously, they've always been a guitar company, but we haven't really seen anything from them for a long time.
No. I kind of think because
we're
Sterlings.
Looking in the wrong place?
No, it's not because we're looking in the wrong. Well, kind of. I think it's that we have all worked for a retailer who has never stopped Cort.
Didn't sell them. Yeah, maybe that's fair.
They tend to go for retailers who don't sell everything else. Yeah. So the local one to us is a little shop called Badlands, who I don't think sell Fender and don't sell Epiphone, so they've got Cort instead.
Yeah, Cort and Shine and
Yamaha.
Like
they do vintage as well, don't
they?
Yeah,
exactly that. So I'm going to go and try and check one of
these. I think it'd be great to get one of these. I think if we can just check it out and see what the vibe is.
Definitely.
Or you could just nail some crap pallets together and
God. A glowing review from Joe Branton. Joe Branton, talk about some more guitars, some brand new models from Ola England's Solar Company.
Yes, yeah, so Solar, who are we've spoke about them before, but as a quick recap, this is Ola England's own company now that he's stepped away from Washburn, and he's moved his range of signature models to his own company, Solar. They're essentially exactly the same thing. And he has announced now 8 new models to this range. Now, that sounds like a lot, and I think it's a stretch calling it 8 new models, because actually what it is 6 and 7 string versions of one shape, and which is his standard Superstrat, and the other one is his Explorer shape that's just available in an ash body and a mahogany body with a 6 and 7 string format. So it's, you know, it makes it sound like he's announced a load of models. It's basically 2 shapes with some spec differences. But so the probably the best thing, when the Washburn Ola England came out, his original Superstrat shape, which was in a satin black finish, and it was very tastefully done with some cutaways on the horns for improved access. Everything about it was exactly what you wanted from like a functional metal guitar. And I remember when we had him in the store at GAK, you were still there, Mark, weren't you?
Yeah, that was one of the last things I did at GAK.
He did a talk, and I really enjoyed the fact that he was quite open about the fact that he thought metal guitars were terrible because they all have active pickups and Floyd Roses.
Yeah.
And that's just stupid for a genre of music that's supposed to be defined by being like aggressive and hard hitting. Active pickups just mean you don't have to actually hit your strings that hard, and Floyd Roses just mean that, you know, you can't really be in any interesting tunings. So he has his own Seymour Duncan Solar pickups, and all his guitars are hardtail as well, which is super cool, and in a satin black finish, which is just very, very tasteful. So he's just essentially in increased colours to that range. I think this is the one. The Superstrat is the one. The Explorer is obviously great. It's exactly the same spec in an Explorer body shape. It's quite similar to the what was it called? The Shadow Fret? The one that came out of Chapman recently?
The Ghost Fret.
Ghost Fret, that was it. So
great guitar.
Yeah, so the Solo is very similar to that. I think these are fantastic guitars if you want something that's going to be an absolute metal workhorse, but surprisingly, you know, it obviously will do everything else because it's quite versatile, passive pickups and hardtail. It's just obviously it has a very quintessentially metal look. I think you'd be hard-pushed to find something better for the money in the metal world at the moment, although, as I think we spoke about the first time we spoke about these Solo guitars, it is probably the worst brand logo of all time.
Too much into it.
No, the sort of weird, like almost italic impact font, like it's I can't imagine less work going into a logo ever, but it's not really
his prerogative though, is it?
Well, I don't know, he's got like his symbol on the 12th fret, which is fine. It sort of falls into that sort of thing that, you know, that sort of crop circle style thing that metal bands have been going for the last decade. It's just the headstock logo looks like a hi-fi company. That's the sort of the problem. I'd have thought it would have a bit more to it, you know.
One of the things I hate the most in the guitar world is 12th fret like signature inlays.
Yeah,
I really hate it, because particularly like the Chapman stuff, you know, that I actually wouldn't mind buying one of the Tele styles. I think they're really good value for money, particularly on the cheaper end of things now. You know, I think the Teles are actually pretty nice,
but it's that Infinity logo,
I just really, really don't like logos on the 12th fret. Just put a double dot marker.
Who did make it work, and I do realise I talk about this guitar a lot, but the Gibson Joan Jett with the two hearts.
Absolutely fine. I'm down
amazing
with that.
And they're like two dots, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. They're small and subtle. Yeah.
That's true. I mean, I think that's why a lot of us wouldn't buy the 2014 series of Gibsons, was when they had that 120th anniversary.
Yeah,
2015,
weren't they?
No, 2014.
I think so, mate.
Yeah, I think
2014. So. 2015 was the hologram on the back of the headstock and the modern
logo
ones and stuff. It was 2014. It was the 120th
2015
anniversary.
Was the one where they had the 100 logo on.
Yes,
the
exactly.
100. Did you see, talking of this sort of thing, did you see there was a I think it was an Instagram picture maybe that Joe Bonamassa put up of two new
Epiphones.
I want to say Epiphone 335.
There's like a 345, which is the Tone Master, the one that's got the old Switch Master that's got the impedance switching like a BB King. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about putting that in the news, but there's actually no details on them yet.
Well, but what I thought was quite funny is he's got two models. I can't find the just trying to find a picture of it now. There was two models. There's one that he said that he called his what did he call it? It was quite funny the way that he phrased it. It was called like the egotist model or something like that,
right,
because
nice.
It's just got his signature down the fretboard, like inlaid down the fretboard. But he then also said like, oh, there's also a normal one,
right,
for
okay,
you know. But I thought it was quite funny that he was sort of taking the piss out of himself.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Can we all talk about, of course, the greatest instrument to feature a 12th fret inlay, and the one that it's done the best on, the Sting reissue P bass, which just has a block inlay on the 12th fret and then his signature. Sting.
It's horrible. I love that guitar, and it's exactly what you want, like a 54, 55.
Oh, it's so good.
It's such a good
bass. Because they were Japanese made originally. I don't know if they then transitioned to Mexico.
Yeah, I think they were Mexican towards the end.
Right.
But they were fantastic, because I think at the time, I mean, it's a glaring hole in the Fender catalogue, and it always is, that there was obviously the Japanese 51.
Yeah.
And there was the Sting 54, 55. And that's it. They don't have anything else. It's like, why are you not doing this? Why are you not doing this again?
The 51 is the slab body, and the 54.
I know what the difference is.
I'm saying. But yeah, I mean, they provide the two things, but they didn't do the kind of
But they should be standard line, man.
Yeah,
both of those guitars should be standard line.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
the same reason. Why isn't there like a single pickup Esquire in the standard sort of Fender line?
There was for a long time.
Yeah, just didn't sell.
I just don't think it was very popular.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. In the classic series, so with the like 50s and 60s Tele, there was an Esquire.
I don't think it's discontinued. I think you can probably still get it. I just don't think they're very popular.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because, you know, they're great. But I also understand it, because
why not just get an extra neck pickup?
Just get a Tele and just don't use the neck pickup.
They were the same money and they had the same neck profile. So
Do you know what, actually, on this topic, something happened that confused me a little bit.
That's unsurprising to me.
Well, we got in a couple of custom shop Esquires at GAC, but they were two pickup Esquires, and I didn't realise that happened.
Yes,
because I understand the concept of the Esquire and why it was introduced as an affordable version of the Telecaster. I just don't understand at what point they introduced two pickup versions of it.
I don't think that's true.
That is 100%
don't
true.
Think that's
not
true.
Not as an affordable model of the Telecaster.
Yes, it was.
No.
Yes, it was.
Don't think so.
Someone, Jay, get up the history of the...
I did a video on the history of the Esquire and I looked up stuff on it. So
fine.
100% it's...
I don't think there is any difference between... I don't think there was... I don't think there was any, if I remember correctly, because we were talking about this at work fairly recently, I actually don't think there is any real difference between an Esquire and a Telecaster. The Esquire was now if I remember the way, so originally the guitar was, yeah, there was the Esquire, and then there was the Broadcaster, and then the Broadcaster became the Telecaster, and then Telecaster was
via the Nocaster.
Well, Nocaster was, you know, what it became.
Let's scratch the name.
And then
off,
I think the Esquire, I think Esquires just turned into Telecasters, and I think it was, rather than what you're saying there, which is a two pickup Esquire, I think that really it was the Esquire, but the Telecaster became
Here's an idea.
Wasn't the Snakehead model originally called an Esquire?
I'll tell you what.
That's the original one.
Rather than bumble through this, we haven't got anything down for the Patreon episode this week, so we could look into this while we have a little break at the end of the podcast and then talk about this when we've actually got some information about it on the Patreon episode. How about that?
Sure.
Let's talk about the last thing in the news this week.
Oh, sorry, just before you do that, I found this Joe Bonamassa thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, it's him leaking these new guitars. There's two new Epiphone 335s, which is weird because they don't tend to call the 335 shaped guitars by Epiphone 335s.
They tend
to call
them dots. Yeah.
But there's two 2019 Joe Bonamassa Epiphone 335s. They are they're black with the sort of Les Paul custom
binding
aesthetics, so and gold hardware, Bigsby, and he says that there's two models. There's What's My Name Again, which is the one that has his signature in like the material that block inlays are made out of, runs from like the 12th fret down to the 4th fret.
He's done that before on other signature models.
Yeah, yeah. And then so that's the What's My Name Again, and then the other one is also available in regular non-ego spec.
Right, fine.
Which I just think that's quite cool. Like, yeah, you know, he's obviously, like, he knows what he's doing there.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because people will want the guitar that has his signature on it, you know. It's, I mean, I don't want it.
Some people will.
Completely.
Some maniacs.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the last thing in the news this week. We have seen a lot of interesting stuff coming from this company this year. ZVEX have just announced the Vibraphase.
Yeah, so this follows on from the Candela Vibraphase that ZVEX released, I guess, two and a half years ago. I guess it was NAMM 16.
Yeah.
Arguably the most memorable thing that happened at NAMM.
They released, and I think they only made one, and it was 12 grand, if I remember correctly.
I thought it was 10.
Was it? Okay. But they made, basically, they made a pedal that was... That was not a pedal. It was like some steampunk wet dream.
It was a contraption. That's how I describe
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, it was
extremely practical.
Yeah, completely. And it was, I guess, it was optical because it was powered by a candle.
Yeah, exactly. It was an optical modulation pedal.
But yeah, Zachary has obviously taken a step back and gone, you know what? That was actually a cool sounding effect. Maybe I should make it in a model that is, you know, usable by most people. So he's made the Vibraphase, which is a vibrato and phaser in one. It's in Mark Packham's favourite vertical series.
It looks like a normal pedal.
Yes, it does look like a normal pedal. But yeah, it's the vibrato and phaser are on a blend knob, so you can go from one to the other. And
Why they didn't make this like brass?
They didn't make it look like the Candela.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it is a bit strange, and it doesn't look like a ZVEX pedal because it's got these weird sort of, it's got like a bit of a 60s psychedelia.
But a lot of their pedals have that. A lot of the pedals have that kind of hand painted kind of weirdness.
Yeah, but
to
that's
them.
Not really what this is. It's blocky this, and it's, psychedelic.
I think it looks cheap.
It looks like a Digitech pedal.
I wouldn't go that far.
One of the new ones.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, fine.
But anyway, it looks great. It sounds great. The vibrato mix between or blend between vibrato and phaser, the feedback control, the high bias and the low limit are all analog, and the speed control is what powers the LED, which is what runs the which is what the analog controls take their cue from. So a really, really interesting pedal. We watched a video of it and I was completely lulled by Zachary and his dulcet tones.
Oh, God. He's got a great voice.
He's got a fantastic voice.
What a man.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd really recommend watching the video. The only issue that we do have with this...
You should do ASMR.
The only issue that we do have with this pedal is it is $269, which does seem like a lot of money.
It's cheaper than 10 grand.
Yes, it is cheaper than 10 grand.
But is it better than a Deja Vibe?
Well... You know.
Well, I mean, there's so much competition in this. You know, yeah. We've talked about it quite a lot. You know, this kind of phasing, kind of uni vibe style thing. What was that one that we had? The quite expensive rotary pedal, Dry Bell.
Oh, the Dry Bell Vibe Machine. Absolutely love that pedal. I mean, don't forget that that's actually 350 quid.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a big chunk of money. But that might be one of the most fantastic sounding modulation pedals of all time. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there is a bucket of competition for this sort of thing. Do you know what's weird that I tried recently, totally under the radar? Moore put out a modulation reverb.
Okay.
So it's a reverb pedal, but you can choose the sort of the tails of your reverb to phase or tremolo or flange.
Oh, right. Interesting.
So just your echoes will have that slight modulation. Such an unusual idea.
Can you remember what it's called?
It's something like modverb or something
right,
like
okay.
that. But
classic.
Speaking of modulating your reverb trails, has anyone used the Holy Grail Flurb?
Yeah, of course.
That is such a fantastic effect.
So what is it?
The Flurb?
The Flurb.
It's just one of the settings on the Holy Grail Nano?
No. The
original
classic,
Holy Grail.
The classic, the cast, but no, not the cast box, like the...
The like bent steel
one. Yeah, the bent steel box Holy Grails. You got Spring, Hall... And Flurb.
Yeah, flange reverb.
Such a great effect.
They dropped it, I think, for most of the Holy Grails, although there is one that brings it back. You're right, Jay. I can't remember which one it is.
The Max and the Plus.
The Plus, I think, maybe. Because at one point they had four Holy Grail models
still,
out, I think.
At the moment, there is still the Max, the Plus, the Nano and the Neo.
I think it might be the difference between the Nano and the Neo. One of them has got the Flurb and one of them has something else instead of the Flurb. I can't remember which way around it is, but yeah.
Now all these idiots want Shimmer, right? Yeah. Like, listen, mate. Get off your high
Let's
horse.
Go back to the early 2000s and bring back Flurb.
Bring back the Flurb.
Yeah, definitely. And
preferred it when it was holy, holier, and holiest.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
I think I had the holiest, and it was a completely unwieldy monster.
It was about the size of an A4 piece of paper.
It was, and it was the big thing about it was like, oh yeah, it's gated. It's like, who wants gated reverb?
The 80s.
It was awful. I used it for a while in this band that I was just I was just singing in it, and I used it on my vocals, and which was great up until I smashed my foot through the pedal when I, for a bit of artistic,
you were showing off, basically.
I was showing off, and I kicked my foot up in the air really high, and I was going to slam down on the pedal to turn it on, but my foot went through the pedal, and I completely obliterated it, and therefore cut the signal, and so couldn't sing for a while.
And the audience loved that.
Absolutely,
much better.
You.
With that, we should wind up this podcast. We're going to go and record a Patreon episode. Firstly, clearing up our knowledge of the birth of the Telecaster, but secondly, answering questions from AC about getting back into guitar after being away for some time, from David about pedal switches and amp switches, from Philip about repairing pickups, from Josh about getting back into bass, and from Saz about Plek setups. If you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $5 a month gets you access to the extra half an hour every week, plus bonus series like Branton's Rant On. And at $10 a month, you get your name read out in one breath by Joe Branton, like these people have.
Are we agreeing that we're not doing it assisted by song anymore? Or?
Okay, fine. Just for clarity.
Right, no, I thought that's what we were doing.
Okay, well, let's try this week without a song, and let's see how you get on, because last week I think you struggled. Your task this week is to make sure you say everyone's name correctly.
I've never struggled.
People who have paid for this every week, and one, at least one person on this list, you've never said their name correctly.
Doesn't deserve it. It's a weird name.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Rampage.
Three, Rampage. Two, one, go.
Ryan McDermott, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Nate Nagel, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, Emery James Baker, Christoph Rapetisichachur, Zane Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Witzer, Martin Cliff, Matt Davies, Aaron Sherman, Blake Weiland, Jake Gray, Christopher Loser, Juan Correa, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Nordvik, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Mancha, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Mark Cross, Brad Page, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moe Gravett, and Carl. Anderson.
You sounded like you were struggling halfway through this week. You didn't have quite the same panache as it does.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
If anybody wants...
Do you want to do it again?
No.
If anybody wants their individual name sent to them as an MP3 so they can use it as their like text alert or something.
Doorbell.
I'm sure Joe is happy to oblige. I can just imagine Colin Anderson like being in a important business meeting and he forgets to mute his phone.
Yes.
And he's like, Colin! The bank manager's like, Mr. Anderson, what's
every
going
time,
on there?
Every time I say that name, I think of the guy who used to host Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Clive Anderson. If you want your name read out like that, do let us know on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. I reckon £5 per name, something like that. And if you want to join in the conversation elsewhere, we're on Twitter @guitar nerds, on Instagram @guitar nerds, YouTube @guitar nerds videos. That's probably it, isn't it?
Yeah, Facebook guitar nerds group.
Group.
I said that one. Yeah, you said that already. Yeah. Send us something in the post. Yeah. I don't know where you could post it to. Just write Guitar Nerds on an envelope and see where it goes. Something like that. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Cheers,
bye bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.